I asked all the boys when I showed up today what was the best sports from the weekend.
They I feel like we let you down.
You did. Yeah, you really did.
I'm going to get better. I'm just striving to get better.
I don't know if you will.
I might not now. Yeah. I'm pretty old, and I think I'm... Yeah.
I know. I'm starting to feel like your dad, where I'm just disappointed all the time.
Welcome to the club, man.
Yeah, I was going to say. Starting to get very dad-ish. It's an incredible sports weekend. Will Lewis here. That's awesome. All right. He's settling in. But yeah, it's an incredible sports weekend. The correct answer for the best sports from the weekend was Max Holloway, which... was just about one of the coolest things. I don't think, well, you don't need headphones. You don't need to hear anybody. You just need to hear me. I mean, you can use that. Yeah, Armin's scrambling around. He's like, Armin's like, this is it. You're such a celebrity that Armin's like trying to pretend like he does a job. Like, he's just running around. He's like, this is how I do things here. I get things done.
Sports event wasn't a Raptors Heat over the weekend?
No, I can I tell you something?
Twice?
I just, even though you were my leadoff guest today.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't watch 5 seconds of Raptors yesterday. I watched the highlights this morning. I went,
I commend you for even watching the highlights. There were none.
It was an accident. I walked into the studio, there was highlights running, and I went, oh, there's the Raptors highlights. Oh, okay, that's nice. Tyler Hero, double pump fake, two guys that both flew by like it was a pickup game, he hit a trailer for a dunk, and I went, that's cool. Goodness. That's basically treating them like the crappy team at the run. But okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
It was a little embarrassing. Okay, before I get to the Raptors, do you sport in any other sports? I don't think we've ever discussed this before.
Do I watch other sports? I watch soccer.
Yeah.
I watch
you're a soccer
guy. Dreadful 1-0 Liverpool loss.
Yeah, okay. So it's just, you just watch painful. You're like, I'm going to watch the Raptors and 1-0 losses. That's how I'm going to spend my weekend with sports.
Yeah. But that's about it. Why? What else are you going to ask me about?
So no golf, no Max Holloway golf. Knockout? Yeah, golf. Golf. Is, listen, I get it. I just, the Masters.
Yeah. It's a cultural difference once again, but you know, it's okay. Golf is fine. What happened in golf?
The Scottie Tiger Scheffler won? No. Okay. Tiger didn't win.
I saw Tiger hit like somebody in the bushes.
Yeah, it was great.
Love that golf has like people in the bushes.
Dude, this is so I'm such a choker whenever I watch golf. That's one of my first thoughts every single time is the gallery, the way they sit. I'm like, the most impressive thing about golf, the most clutch thing is that they don't just stripe drives right into the crowd. Because if that's me, some of those narrow corridors that they have to nail it down, and like people will sit there and they'll just be staring right at it.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Mm-hmm. I would be scared to be in some of those galleries as an observer, not even just as someone who would have to do the act.
Yeah, the guy who got hit in the face. First off, I hope he's okay. But like,
he's fine.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure this is like a great story that he's going to tell everybody. He's like, I came into work on Monday, and he's like, I got hit in the head by a tiger. Look at this welt.
I was going to say, that's probably the most interesting thing that's happened in that guy's entire life.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's probably pretty blessed. Okay.
Yeah. He's probably doing all right. He's at the Masters. Sitting there. So, what's this?
He's just like, oh, cool. I'm just going to just sit here and not move.
I want to make sure that I get to this whole post up for Tiger Woods. He thought that morning, and then bang, all of a sudden, he's getting smoke with it. Yeah, it was a pretty incredible sports weekend. But no, I did bring you in because the Raptors season has mercifully come to an end. Mm. This is actually, was that the greatest moment of the Raptors season to you? Was it just being over? Because you do all these games. You got to watch them all. There's been nights where I have genuinely thought about you and the content that you have to make. And I'm what is he going to do today? Like, what is the angle?
Yeah, the angle, they beat you in a submission this year where it's like, you can't hope for wins anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the angle is just like, all right, let's just only look at the positives. Cause like the reality is like too negative.
I have a question about that.
But. Yeah. So like I call it the Darko Rajakovic approach. Like it's the same thing he does.
You were throwing pizza parties. You were like, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
Every night's a pizza party on my show.
Once in a while, I'm like, okay, I can't take it anymore. Like when they played him in Minnesota and they lost by 48 points, which is the franchise record for most lopsided loss. They also lost their 15th straight game that game. They also signed a guy out of the G League who was averaging 10 in the G League. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not averaging at least 20 to 30, ideally above 30, you know, like, you're going to struggle when you come to the NBA. And, of course, since then, I think he's been blocked as many times as he's made shots. That's Malik Williams, who signed an 11-day contract, really, because, you know, the Raptors needed just one more game out of him, and they got them last night. But in any case, they lose by 48 that game. And then after the game, obviously I'm upset. I'm like, look, even if you lose, there's a way to lose. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? Just don't set headlines when you lose. It's fine. You lose by 15, you lose by 20. Like, that's just a ho-hum kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then after the game, Darko had one quote when he was searching for positives, as he always was. And he was like, you know, we did see some positives. Like, guys were communicating on defense, and I was like, the bar is rec basketball.
Yeah.
The bar is you got to communicate on defense.
Really,
like, screen coming left, screen coming left. Yeah, like, So anyway, like, I feel for Darko. What else are you supposed to say? Like, hey, they made me start a G League center.
No, I know.
Who didn't even practice with us that day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
the G League center, I'm doing great.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Happy for Malik. I think he got like probably close to 150K for that.
Yeah. It's nice. Good for him. Secure the bag. Get some money.
No kidding, that's
all right. Okay, so it's the worst season since 2011 from a record standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They had a major injury to Scottie Barnes that robbed us of any type of stretch interest, right? Where we went, hey, you know what? All right, the team has picked a direction, and now we're going to get to see Scottie Barnes operate with the new team and the new players, the new offense. And he'd actually just been criticized pretty heavily right before the injury.
Yep.
Like, I was at that Spurs game Wembanyama, I went, oh, my God, this is the greatest player that we might ever see. Mm-hmm. And Scottie Barnes was like, I'm going to pout. I'm going to drive at you a couple of times and then quit and pout. And we're criticizing him, and he came back. He was okay. He's looking certain good, and boom, injury. They have a gambling scandal.
Yep.
Which ends up becoming like something that I look at and go, oh, this will probably go away. It's like, nope, it's a major story. You even have Shaq on a pod going, I would punch him in the face. It was like a pretty embarrassing story for the Toronto Raptors. Yeah. We're getting video breakdowns of this guy. OG and Siakam get lost in trades.
Mm-hmm.
The latter in a pretty incredibly underwhelming way.
Yeah.
We get told that ticket prices are going up by quite a like sizable amount.
Like
going
another 20%.
Yeah, pretty good. 20% after seeing the season. Do the Raptors still have an identity or a culture under Masai Ujiri?
I don't think you can be honest and say yes right now definitively.
Dude,
I think that like they're searching for a new thing, right? And the thing with that is like you can find it, and if you really do want to look at positives, you can say that like Scottie made an All-Star this year.
Mm.
I think Quickly and RJ are pretty promising as young starters. They've certainly shown what they can do. I like, by the way, how serious they are coming from New York. Like, you could tell from when you have players coming from a different culture, they immediately step in and they're able to just lift the standard of play, and that shows you that your culture was really lacking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The fact that, like, they just walked in and they're good, right? It's like how the former Raptors are good everywhere they go now. Like, Norm is beloved by the Clippers, or, like, you know, Kyle keeps going everywhere, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, the Raptors are just absolutely searching, and look, they try to hold on. They try to give that last core one last run. They gave him Jakob Poeltl, and they're like, go ahead and cook. And then they lost. And then now it's like, okay, wow, this is pretty terrible, and we need to pivot. And they took the last exit off the highway kind of deal, right? Like, that's OG with, like, half a year left on his contract. They got two starters for him. You got to say that's pretty good. Although OG certainly is very, very good for New York right now, and I'm very much looking to see what New York does in the playoffs. And then the Pascal trade, I mean, that's just underwhelming, man. Like, you look at all the prospects that Indiana had, and you came out of there with Bruce Brown and Jordan Wara.
Yeah.
Like, the picks
and you couldn't even flip Bruce Brown. That was part of the trade. I went, okay, like, at least they'll flip this. And it was like, no.
Did you see Bruce Brown after the game? He's like, well, I've been playing on a knee injury, so.
Yeah, and you're like, cool.
Yeah.
That's nice.
All right.
That's nice to know.
I mean, we'll see.
You felt as though it's just such a hard departure from people who cover the Raptors, people who watch the Raptors, fans of the Raptors, whatever, going from, well, they're trying to build Spurs north. And the Spurs end up, you know, that goes away too. We just know that all time changes things. Nothing lasts forever. You don't end up having a cultural permanence, but it just, it evaporated so quickly.
Yeah.
It went from, okay, Masai doesn't tank, Masai doesn't lose. And then all of a sudden they're tanking in a season where they don't even own the rights to their pick fully in a draft that they gave up on a year before that they looked at correctly, by the way. Actually, if you're supposed to have like real faith in the front office, you should look at the trades from last year when they traded the first for Poeltl and go, they were really right about this draft, you know? Like, they really kind of nailed it in terms of looking forward and looking ahead and saying, there's not a ton of value here. What are we going to do? We're going to take Zach Edey with the 13th overall pick and feel really sad about putting him out there every night? That's the one thing. That's it. It feels to me very rudderless right now. It feels very much like the plan is not a real vision. Whereas before, I've always felt like Masai has a vision. He's got his principles. He doesn't want to try to move off of these things.
Yeah.
And now it kind of feels like they're entering this offseason. People are talking about maybe signing a free agent of the Melton caliber. Mm. Going to this draft.
Would love De'Anthony Melton.
Of course. But that
I love De'Anthony Melton.
But you go
back
in
to the days of like Jared Jack's coming on a
But this is what I mean. Yeah. Is it kind of feels like we're entering old Raptors stuff, which makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Under Masai Ujiri. I've never really felt that way since like he first came into the building.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's all entirely valid. I think for the team, if they would, the way they would probably spin it is we needed to clear out some of the older guys to allow the new guys to form a new identity.
Sure.
But the old identity was also quite good.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, that's what pulled everyone in as fans was like, we see this competitive product night in and night out. We saw that they played hard. You know, look, they're at a talent deficiency. Like, ultimately, this whole situation would have been better if, like, Pascal was at that high end level that could carry the franchise, or that Fred was at that high level, and neither of them really could do it. But ultimately, they played like champions most times, you know, and they gave it their best. I think for the younger group, you're just hoping that they find lightning in a bottle once again, right? You know, like in the same way that certainly back 10 years ago, I didn't feel that confidence about like, okay, Kyle and DeMar are going to be this like awesome combo, like. But all of a sudden, they did, and then they ran with it. And I think they're just kind of hoping and praying that Scotty, Quickly, RJ, Grady, they just go ahead and run with it, and they take it to another level. And it's certainly possible to some degree. My biggest concern right now is just the Raptors have been so bad defensively all year, and even when they had good defenders at the start of the season, right? Like, you had OG Anunoby, who now he's going to play with the Knicks. Everyone realizes, wow, this guy could be, like, one of the best defenders in the NBA. And it's like, yeah, of course. You had Jakob Poeltl, who, you know, they swear up and down that he's a top 10 center, especially defensively.
Yeah.
Because mostly he's shooting push shots on offense, right?
Well, and they paid him like a top 10 center, so.
Yeah, that too, which is honestly whatever. Like, they're like, what, 4-28 this year without Jakob Poeltl? Mm-hmm. That's an incredible record.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they had a strong defensive group to start the year, and they still were bad defensively.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, you're not going to get anywhere, especially with a young team, until you let them play defense. Like, you look at Orlando, the turnaround they've had. I mean, really excited to see what they do in the playoffs. You know, you look at even Houston making a 21 jump. Yeah, they added some veterans, but they started playing defense, and they got a coach that, like, hammered them every single time if they didn't play defense. You know, like, he'll bench Şengün. He'll bench, like, Jalen Green if you don't play defense. I don't get that same sense from Darko. Darko was like, look, we're going to move the ball on offense. And he says that, like, every single time, and he's consistent with that, and they have improved on moving the ball on offense, but like the end result is also they're like one of the five worst defensive teams in the entire league, and until you move that to at least average, even the year that the Raptors jumped with Kyle and DeMar, they jumped to being good on defense, and Dwayne Casey came in and was like, we're gonna play defense, and when we had Dwayne, what, you know, you came on the Raptors show and we interviewed Dwayne, well, I interviewed Dwayne, sorry, Dwayne. I watched you.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah. You know what, I gotta appreciate the
you
fact.
Asked all the questions that I said that I would have asked though,
I did fully box you out, but one of the things Dwayne mentioned to us was like, yeah, I came in with the intent to like lay down the foundations on defense, and that actually did carry the Raptors for quite a long time. So we will see. I mean, I think they're, it's, I don't know, it's like a forest fire. You burn the whole thing and you hope that there is like enough nutrients for like new trees to grow or whatever. But right now we're very much in the scorched earth portion.
So that's, I think this is what I'm trying to grapple with when it comes to like, you're in the scorched earth thing. I just want to know what the one thing is that you don't really want to burn down, or like, I want to know what sort of the anchor point is, because for me, when the Raptors were supposed to be heading into this rebuild and kind of we all saw the writing on the wall, that's the scary part, is I really had this faith in Masai Ujiri that was unparalleled with any other executive that I've ever known in this city. And I guess that's not saying much, because this isn't exactly like championship city. Like, man, I had so much more faith in him than John Ferguson Jr. Like,
oh, wow, like, what a name.
I'm like, wow, I really locked into Masai. But that's the thing that scares me a little bit, is looking back on the rebuild, everyone kind of knowing you had to pick a lane, and then him zagging almost like defiantly at that last deadline with the Jakob Poeltl trade, saying, no, this is the core. Then he has a team that is kind of built around defensive guys. The league is going super offensive. Everybody's scoring. He's like, okay, no. But then all of a sudden they do a rules change where they basically say, all right, we're going to let guys defend differently. And you've traded some of your good defensive players for, I think, a little bit less than you could have gotten in return. It looks like when you're talking about the defense, I look at this team and I go, okay, I don't think that a team with Emmanuel Quickly, or where he's going to all of a sudden be a defensive superstar. I don't think that RJ, he's like a competent defensive player. I don't think that Kelly Olynyk is going to ever give you good defensive minutes.
Yeah.
As much as I like Kelly Olynyk and some of the ball movement stuff, I look at this team and kind of what they put together, and it just feels so mismatch. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what anyone is supposed to do here, what everybody's role is outside of trying to figure out, is Scottie Barnes going to be a number one? And is Quickley going to be a number two? And I have a lot of doubts about both of those things.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, until they completely show it to you night after night, like, not just in flashes, because you can always point to, like, here's a really good game from Quickley. Here's a really good game from RJ. Actually, RJ is probably the most consistent scorer on this team.
No question.
He goes to the basket every time, and he somehow always finds a way to score. You know, Scottie probably definitely has the most upside on this team, and he's shown you the highest highs, especially two-way of all those guys. But, I mean, yeah, like, that's, you know, it's funny, because when you're describing this, what you're saying is that, like, the Raptors had a... They had innovative strategies previously.
Yeah.
Right? They were like, okay, you know what? Vision 6-9, we're trying something. It's different. It's unique.
But it was a plan.
We got a coach that is very creative and actually created something for this group. And it didn't ultimately work out. Realistically, they needed more shooters. But the thing is, like, now they're like, okay, well, we're seeing the whole league, as you mentioned, tilt towards offense. Everybody is running offense through their fives now. Well, now we all of a sudden have to have offense through their fives. They didn't have that before. First of all, they didn't even have fives before. There were no centers with that 6-9 group, all right? It was like Thad Young playing center or Pascal. Remember OG playing center against Jokic?
I mean, those were actually happy times for me because I loved watching him defend.
Yeah, they actually competed and played hard and could play defense. But like, okay, fine. Now we got to move to this playmaking five kind of situation. We hire a coach now who is like very much updating the Raptors' like offense towards what it is now, league average offense. But in doing so, you have created this thing where it's like nobody guards anymore, right? And especially in the second half of the season, like obviously you could say, well, Scottie went down, Yaka went down. You can excuse them for everything. First off, you can't excuse it for like 2 months, okay? Like you really can't. And it's not like it's like these other players have something to play for as well. The end of the roster guys, none of them really showed you anything, which is probably the most disappointing part of this this whole run here. And then, like, yeah, it's just Kelly Olynyk with four guards all the time. Like, you're not going to win any games like that because defensively, you will genuinely be one of the worst teams in the league defensively when you do that. So, I don't know. I'm curious to see if there's going to be locker room cleanouts tonight. It's not going to be Darko. It's not going to be Masai. So, we'll hear from them eventually. I mean, the players, they're going to say what they can say. But I think I want to know from, you know, Darko and from Masai, what is the big brain strategy that goes into this, right? Because that's ultimately what they're responsible for. Maybe not the day-to-day stuff, the nitty-gritty. That's probably more Darko rather than Masai. But what is the bigger scheme vision here? Because there's nothing really cutting-edge or innovative about, you know, playmaking through your five, and the fives are Jakob Poeltl and Kelly Olynyk in a world that, like, Domantas Sabonis exists, Nikola Jokic exists. Joel Embiid exists. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I get playmaking through your five when you have those kind of guys. It's just not going to be as cutting edge. So we'll see. I mean, the Raptors have taken on a number of flyers on some young guys, and if they use all their picks, they'll add even more flyers. But there's a real chance that, like, next year could be similar-ish to this one right now.
So I guess, like, ultimately what I'm really driving at here, though, is, again, that lack of strategy, that lack of cutting-edge innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I think about Darko as a coach, like, because this has been the last, you know, 48 hours prepping for this interview with you, I was thinking about, like, hey, man, what are all the things I want to talk about? Darko was a backup plan. Like, Ime Udoka was the original idea for this team. And if you think about, like, what his principles are as a coach versus what Darko's are, it's, like, pretty stark contrast there. You know what
pretty
I mean?
Different. Pretty
like,
different.
Pretty
yeah.
different idea.
Pretty different.
And so, of course, you have to pivot in sports, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be able to have a backup plan. But you went to this coach and, like you said, played through the five, a lot of offense, not a lot of defense. You don't you pumped all your vets out, and even when they were here, it was kind of a, well, you know, there might be two different locker rooms happening, right? Fred kind of kept saying that over and over and over again about the season prior.
That's what you always hear. After losses last season, it was Fred and Pascal fuming and, like, really, really upset about the results. And the other guys are kind of like, whatever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. And so you had young guys that weren't really buying into the culture of the vets. And now I just, like I said, I don't know where the cultural anchor is for this team moving forward, unless it is Scottie Barnes. But that just feels like so much to be throwing on his shoulders.
Sure.
Especially considering that we haven't seen that consistently from him. And he's young. I think Grange wrote a really great piece about hey, it's like way too much for him, way too soon for him, when he had the like walk into the locker room moment. But everything I look at is always like, okay, so you made the Kelly Olynyk trade. You won the guy for place. Okay, fine. Your draft picks this year in a draft that you weren't really interested in. We'll see how they kind of look around your team. Fine. You got your backup coach. You got a trade with the Knicks that I think what, like everybody likes that trade.
Yeah.
But it is, it should be noted that the Knicks made that trade when they were in their most competitive window. Since when? And they went, we're willing to lose these two guys to get OG to try to pursue our opportunity as champions. Like, I just can't point to the one move they made where I say, oh, okay, well, that's the direction. That's the way that Masai is looking at this. And even if you go back to that deadline again, I hate referencing it over and over again, but when he said the whole, we feel like those prices will still be available to us moving forward,
and then
it turned out to be like conclusively not true because we knew there were deals from Minnesota and New Orleans for these guys that were like more of a actual deep price point.
I think you could have even gotten more from the Pacers if you made the trade in the offseason.
Of course you could have.
Yeah.
Man, we knew what the Atlanta Hawks offer was. That was better than what they ended up getting for the Pacers.
You know what? I think this year kind of was TBD just because Kobe Bufkin barely played.
Sure.
And then the game he did play, he actually was the guy guarding Malachi for the 50-piece. which is the funniest, well, probably the funniest story of the season for me is Malachi getting the 50-piece.
And then the next game having like
he was 0 for 12. Oh, man, I love Malachi, but like, damn, that wasn't working out. By the way, you remember the start of the season when Darko was like, Malachi, you got to smile. You're ugly when you don't smile.
Oh, my God,
I was like, all right, man, what in the gym teacher is this?
I was going to say, this really, they could have clipped like 48 Darko quotes from this year and just put it in like a flip book and been like, did he really say this or was this a made up coach or is this from, like you said, a gym teacher's quote? I just don't, here's my thing. It's like, okay, they picked a direction, right? They picked a direction, but I don't feel like I know what that direction actually is. Like they're going into next season. Maybe they don't have their pick again. Maybe, you know, that doesn't convey to the San Antonio Spurs and they walk into a season and you go, okay, so you've got Quickly, RJ and Barnes. You've got Grady Dick, and you've still got those two bigs. It looks like the idea here would be to try to once again compete for a play-in position, which is kind of what it was this year. You're just sort of in the same spot with a different cast of characters. It doesn't really feel like a rebuild. It doesn't really feel like a reset. It just kind of feels like you're walking into a year with different guys doing the same thing.
Well, the key word that the front office likes to use, especially when Bobby does it, because I think Bobby obviously is much less charismatic than Masai. Even I like Bobby, but like, come on, he's just not as charismatic.
No, but Masai is like a real professional speaker. Like Masai has made me feel things where I'm like, I'm so proud to be from here. Like,
if the whole GM thing doesn't work out, he should run Toastmasters.
Like, yes, no question.
He's got a lot of riz, as they say now. But like for them, the key word, especially at the trade deadline, was optionality. You know, we now have the option to do this. We have the option to do this. We acquired optionality. You know, even talking about the Bruce Brown contract, that's the ultimate optionality. You could pick up his option and trade him, or you could let him go and then also re-sign him in a different contract, or you could trade him at the whatever. A lot of options with that. I think what they're looking at the whole roster is like, we're waiting for these players to break, and then we'll adapt accordingly. Rather than just like, we're going to set up on this course and we're going to need everybody to follow in line with this exact strategy. So they're just waiting on the players, I think, to take them in that direction. And largely, it's going to be Scotty. You know what I mean? Like, I think this year was really promising for him. He makes his first All-Star game. What's the next jump? Because that alone is not going to carry this team even back to the play-in. Well, maybe back to the play-in. I don't know. The Hawks are, it depends on what you define as the play-in. Like, the Sixers, who are like 21 games above the Raptors. Or is it the Hawks, who are like 11 games above the Raptors? Ideally, you're closer to the Sixers portion, but it's like, dude, what's going to have to happen next year for the Raptors to be like, what did the Sixers win this year? 46 dude, games?
That's yes. Like, Sixers won 47 games.
That'd and be a miracle if the Raptors won 47 games next year.
It's not going to happen for them.
No, that's unless there's like a super, super human jump from Scotty and probably from the rest of the guys.
That's what I keep looking at, though, and thinking about the landscape of the East, right, is so I don't see a team that's going to take a step back other than maybe the Cavs because they make maybe a Mitchell trade. But maybe. Even then, it feels like they're such a weird team because they had guys in another lineup all year, and then they'd be like, oh, they don't have Garland and they're better. And you're like, okay, well, this is maybe they don't have Garland and Mobley and they're better. And you're like, okay, well, what is this team exactly? Where are they going? But I don't think the Raptors are going to jump them, regardless of whatever position they'd end up taking. Go through it. Like, maybe it's the Bulls. Maybe it's the Hawks. Maybe you jump the Nets. That's three teams at most.
Those are three of the saddest teams in the NBA, though, by the way. Like, we know that, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, so it's like, you really want to enter the conversation with those teams? I kind of thought that under Masai anyways, I would never feel like the Raptors would be lumped in with those groups. Mm-hmm. And right now, I kind of do. And you're right. A lot of it is Scotty. And you know, if we're doing biggest pauses of the season, it has to be
he's
him.
Number
right?
one. Yeah.
He's number one. He also does benefit a little tiny bit, though, from that injury from a narrative standpoint, which is like, we never did get to see that long stretch of play down the stretch with just him sort of leading the charge.
I don't know if it's benefit. I think that was actually, when you look back at it, like that was the biggest loss from this year.
No, loss for the team. But I'm saying from him, from a narrative standpoint of belief, is that like you got to remove it and kick it all the way over to next year where there's like a reset and you know what you're actually coming into. You don't have to do it on the fly.
Yeah, but I think it was just a missed opportunity by the whole team. Like,
for sure.
You made all the trades, and then you just want to see how it works, right? It didn't really matter how it would work this year, mm-hmm. but you at least want to see it, and you just didn't get to for, like, more than maybe even 10 games
mm-hmm.
with the post-trade deadline kind of group. And I think honestly, Scotty did show some pretty good things when he was healthy. This is back in, like, February at this point. So, but, like, yeah, I mean, you would have loved to see how competitive that is and then adjusted your offseason strategy accordingly. Now you don't even get that chance, so... Mm-hmm. It's all just kind of one big
guess.
TBD.
Yeah,
we're all like,
guess.
Hey, it's great that Scotty's cheering for them on the bench. I'm like, that's like the bare minimum. Like,
oh, I don't know who said that.
Oh, okay. All right,
I was going to say that had to be like
I might have said that, to be honest.
I was going
to
say, like,
the reaction podcast, I had to reach deep for some of those.
My only Scotty on the bench take was, I don't know why he didn't say the thank you to the fans at the end of the season. That part was weird to me. They ran Grady Dick out there to be like, thanks, fans, for the year. And I was like, my ticket prices are about to go up 20%. I want to at least see the future star of the franchise send me off for 2 seconds and say a thing rather than the rookie. It was a minor thing, but But no, it's the same thing where it comes to the theme of this for me is that I'm questioning the leadership in a way that I never really thought I would with Masai.
Yeah, totally.
And
fair.
I'm really questioning leadership because now it's the first time in a long time since Colin DeMar where you haven't really known what the next guy is going to be as a leader. Like, Scotty seems like a fun guy to be around when things are going great.
Mm-hmm.
And when things have gone poorly, I feel like he's showcased that he can pout pretty hard, that he can be pretty much a huge downer as well. Like, again, very young kid, but that's still who you're putting the franchise's, you know, hopes and dreams in his hands. So I think when you enter that level, you start to get criticized a little bit on that level. You try to be patient. I think it always comes with that caveat of, hey, man, how old's Scotty now? 22, 23? Like,
he's like 22, I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's a kid. But in this league, you become not a kid super fast. Like, what is it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
24, 25?
I mean, they've certainly accelerated the timeline. I think, look, ideally, you know, you can compare, like, for example, Wemby. You look how serious Wemby is with everything that he approaches.
Yeah.
The guy goes to sleep at, like, 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Reads books before going
to bed.
He's
like Shohei. They're the same guy. They're, like, the exact same in terms of what they do on and off the field.
Yeah, okay, wow. That's, I mean, I hope he doesn't, I guess he speaks English, so he doesn't need the translator.
Yeah, no, he's not. Yeah, don't get robbed.
Thank goodness, Wemby. Yeah. I thought it just sucks that Shohei's story is so good, and then he has this one little blemish.
No, what really sucks is that he didn't come play baseball here, that we were doing the scandal here. That's the thing that hurts the most still.
That's tough. That's tough. Yeah, I heard Tsuchiya Yujin is still under reservation for a party of 50 for Yusei Kikuchi's wife.
Who makes up for that? Like, who makes good on that bill?
They're just like, you know, kind of a rude move if you book the whole restaurant. Like, you know how much you pull in a night.
They're taking the banner down, like, welcome, Shohei. I just
they're like, oh, whoops. But, I mean, I think, you know, you look at Wemby, like, how serious he is as a young player. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you do know right away, like, you know, what your future franchise is going to be based on sort of, like, the personality of the franchise. And, of course, Wemby is, like, literally a once-in-a-lifetime kind of, like, you know, deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the Spurs won a lot of games this year regardless. Although, by the way, towards the end of the season, you saw Wemby going crazy. Like, the fact that they beat the Nuggets, like...
Last night.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I think for the Raptors, like, you're going to need to see growth and maturity from all these guys. And they're getting thrown into the water. They really are. Mm. And I think that's a good point you're mentioning. It's like, yes, it is very easy to have good vibes when things are winning and things are going well. But it's like, how do you adapt to the losing? And this year was like relentless positivity to the losing. You know what I mean? Like, not once did you hear Darko really, you never even heard once that he ripped the team or even said things that were like remotely critical. Right, they were mostly just like, well, you know, we have a plan for him to improve. That's like the most that you really heard, you know, him like specifically criticize the team. Once in a while, I mean, you know, when you have a 25-57, you know, season, you saw him say like this effort was unacceptable, but it was not like I'm gonna rip the team.
No.
It was just kind of like a I gotta say it.
He never used a major bullet, and I think that that makes sense considering the circumstances of the season. Like
it makes sense considering he was taking over for Nick. Yeah, who, like they kind of like went for everything opposite to Nick when you really look at the bigger picture. You know?
Which is crazy though, because again, when they wanted Ime, it was, oh, they're actually getting a like more hard-ass Nick, you know, an equally hard-ass as Nick. They wanted a different guy, but kind of in a at least attitude and contemporary. Like, you don't think Ime would have ripped this team multiple?
Absolutely,
like,
man.
What it would have looked like after a lot of these games? How do you think he would have handled the Scotty Barnes leaving the bench early situation? Like, it probably wouldn't have been a whole, like, oh, it was a mistake. We talked about it, and it was actually totally fine. And then Barnes going immediately to the media after being like, we never talked about that.
Yeah. That was tough.
Yeah, that really was tough.
Hey, man, Raptors PR staff, you guys have helped a lot with the show. You guys got a lot of guests, but come on, man. This is the one PR messaging.
God, that one was brutal. I guess that's just it, man. You forgive a lot of this season in terms of some of the circumstances, how difficult they were for Darko coming in under these circumstances, for Scotty all of a sudden having to be the guy on the fly and then getting hurt, for Ujiri in some sense that at least he tried to double down his guys and then all of a sudden he knew it wasn't working. He tried to pivot. He did the best he could given the circumstances. But now it's a lot of, okay, well, given the circumstances, but yes, let's see what it is moving forward. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just want to see somebody be the accountable guy on this team. And I'm like, the most accountable guy to me that I can actually rely on, you said it, is like RJ. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, okay, I know who RJ is.
Yeah.
I know what he can provide.
Yeah.
But that's not enough to be
He's a serious individual, though. He really is.
He is. He's awesome. Dude, I love RJ Barrett. Yeah.
I like Quickly, too, a lot.
I like Quickly, too, but it's still very TBD for me in terms of whether or not he's what we saw in New York versus what the Raptors are hoping he can be.
It is. You're asking him to be making a big jump. He did, like, scale up his numbers and everything like that, but it also comes with, like, a much, much bigger opportunity, let's be honest.
And no leverage. Like, did he play? He played one leverage game with the Raptors, and that was that Thunder game where Scotty took the ball and then gave it back to him and was like, no, I'm not going to take the shot.
Well, though he gave it back to Quickly, or he gave it back to Gary, but that game was also another one where it was like, Scotty was playing really well through three quarters, and then from fourth quarter and the first and second overtime, he just didn't want to be involved, which is also a little strange. But in any case, a lot of questions for sure. I think for this team, they're just hoping that somebody takes this team, runs with it, and then they'll adapt. But it is kind of incredible that after a 25-win season, no one's going to put their hand up and say, like, hey, this was really terrible. It's unacceptable. Like, I would love to hear Masai say that. But, I mean, realistically, this is also not a novel situation. Like, Darko's not the first time he's been, you know, as a rookie head coach, put in a situation where they tore down the team. That's actually, a classic playbook for a rookie head coach.
Yeah,
most rookie head coaches are not like Nick Nurse being like, hey, guess what? We're going to get you Kawhi Leonard and Marc Gasol, and it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We already have a culture built in. You were already here for that. Just, run a boxing one on Steph in the finals, and, you know, it's going to, work out, and you're going to be a legend forever. Like, most rookie head coaches come in, they tear the whole team down, and they got to, sit and answer for a 21 season that really isn't entirely their fault. And we've seen young guys being placed into a situation before where it's, a lot of trades midseason, and now you got promoted to a bigger role. And we've seen front offices being like, well, our previous project didn't work out, now we got to pivot towards a different direction. Mm-hmm. All that is just, a pretty standard fare. I know it's, in Toronto, we haven't seen this in over a decade.
Yep.
We've been blessed. We really have been blessed. The question is, what separates, what shows your true test as an executive, as a coach, as young players is, how do you then pull this from being a 25-win team to eventually growing and, getting back to the playoffs? Because right now, you can't see that avenue. But at the same time, I would say the same thing when 13-14, when the Raptors were coming into that season with Rudy Gay, with DeMar DeRozan, with Kyle Lowry, Amir Johnson, Jonas Valanciunas, I didn't know what that team was going to do. I thought they were going to tank, and rebuild and tear it apart for Wiggins. And then they suddenly flipped it around. Now, the East was a lot easier back then.
Yeah.
But, that's the task ahead of the Raptors. And we will see. Nobody can tell you with a straight face that they're guaranteed to get back to that point.
I guess the feeling I have with that is during those times, the Raptors were very much like the nickname was always the Crapters.
Expectations are really low.
The expectations for the Raps were very different from what they are now. Masai, the thing about him that is so incredible is that he completely shifted the mindset of a fan base that was like, win a first round playoff matchup. Oh my God, that would be incredible to do that. to.
That's part of why we love him. That's why he was like when what the Raptors traded for Kawhi, and weirdly enough, it was like a lot of negative reaction. Even going into training camp, it was like media day. I remember sitting there media day, and all the questions are like, well, is Kawhi even going to show up? And then he did show up, and it was like, is he going to stay?
He looked like a hostage when he did first show up, though, like that photo.
He fully did, yeah. Bobby Messiah had, like, a gun pointed in his back and everything. He's like, you better smile.
Yeah. It's like that. You've seen that photo of the elderly couple holding on to Connor McDavid in a photo at the airport? It's like, that was the same thing as the hostage photos. Kawhi you could have just subbed him in for that.
Basically, right? But and that's when Messiah broke into one of his famous speeches, and he was like, believe in yourself, believe in the city.
Toronto,
you know what I mean? And he said that before they won the championship.
Yeah.
But I think what he was identifying was a real thing with not just the Raptors fan base. It was pretty specific to that one, too. But, like, just into Toronto in general. It's like, look, I know that the rest of the teams here have not done well. That's not on me, all right? We brought in this player. Mm-hmm. We've done something historic, and you're about to see it. And then they did. That was legendary. We've seen all those things from Masai. He's always been boosting the Raptors' confidence this whole time. You know, even his first ever, like, speech when he went out to Jurassic Park the first year in 2014, he's like, F Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's the best.
You know what I mean? And look, whatever, they lost. But, like, he gave you that confidence to go in there and kind of compete. Like, that's part of the reason you love him. But I don't know what he could possibly say in a couple of days when he eventually takes the podium that's going to give you that belief, that's going to give you that confidence in this group again.
Yeah, dude, that's what I'm saying. It's like, when you're talking about, hey, they're gonna do their plan as dictated by the way that these players start to play next year, right? That they're going to adapt to what they see from Quickly. They're going to adapt to what they see from Scotty. And I guess this feels kind of like the first time it's been that way. Whereas before it was Masai setting it and being like, this is what it's going to be. Even coming into this year, like it was, again, at least another part of his vision going, well, you know what, let's see it. Mm-hmm. Let's see these guys together. And you felt like, okay, well, it'll be tough to bring OG back, and it's risky, but maybe he's still thinking about it this way. It'll be tough to bring Siakam back, but maybe this is still the way that he's looking at this.
Yeah.
He wants to see it. Now, having it flipped to just, all right, you guys basically determine what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, now it feels like one of the Raptors' biggest advantages is removed, which is the executive that has that, like, that deep, big brain plan that nobody else ends up having. Okay, a little quick rapid fire before we wrap up. Are you rooting for the pick to be conveyed? 54% that the Raptors keep. Do you want it this year, or do you want it to be over with?
I'm waiting for May 12th because that's when you get this chance. By the way, the Raptors, I think 46% chance you keep it.
No, 54% chance you keep it.
It might be flipped, man. I think we're under 50-50.
We're under 50-50?
Yeah, we're at 46%, yeah.
Oh my God, okay.
Yeah. Whatever. Honestly, like I'd rather
all that tanking, and you're like, you have less than a 50% chance at getting a top five pick or top six pick in the worst draft that we've known.
We saw some generational tanking this year.
45.8% is what they have a chance
for a draft that like absolutely is not that strong. Like
it's horrific.
It really isn't that strong. We saw some generational tanking. Like Delano Banton went 0-15 from three last night. 0-15. Anyway. But I think, I'd actually...
That's a shocking... Like, that's a crazy... This is
that one is pretty wild.
0-15, yeah. Like, when you're looking at it and going, it's your 13th. You're like, this is the one.
You're like, no, this is it right here. I would honestly, I'd rather convey it this year and then control my draft for next year, just in case next year goes really poorly. That's the one you definitely don't want to lose your first-round pick to in that draft. I mean, you look at the prospects in that draft, and it's like, man... What happened in this one year that just caused this like difference between the 24 draft and the 25 drafts? Because that one has some special players.
Yeah, I'm the same. I hope the Spurs are making the pick. I don't care if it's 7. You know, I don't care if it's 8. You look at every mock draft and it's like, you know who's in those slots? Like Dalton Knecht, who's 24-year-old small forward.
Yeah.
You're like, okay. Who got blocked in the biggest moment of his career was him getting completely eviscerated by Zach Edey.
Right. Like, I think it was Zach's like one block of the tournament kind of feels like.
I just,
sorry, man.
Yeah. But you look at this draft and it's awful. It's really, really bad. I'm trying to watch the tournament.
It's not strong, man.
Dude, I'm like,
you gotta have, it takes imagination,
dude.
You know, which is like, you didn't really need imagination to be like, oh, Wemby's going to be amazing. You know, you just need eyes and you're like, wow, okay, this is amazing. But like, this year's draft, I mean, with some of the guys in the G League Ignite, who like won like 4 games all year,
they were so bad.
They shut down the whole program. But you're like, okay, if I squint, Yeah. Mares Bezuelas?
No, I mean, guess what? You know why he's my guy?
I kind of like him.
Because I've never seen him. So I'm like, you know who my guys are? All the dudes, Sar.
Yeah, you like, you're not watching Australian basketball?
No, that's the point. I'm like, let me just dream on something. My biggest fear always was the Raptors, like, drafting European guys. Uh-huh. That was almost my least favorite. I'm like, don't make me research this. Yeah. Let me just watch, like, an American guy from the tournament. Like, please.
Sure, yeah.
And then they'd be like, no, we're gonna take,
Caboclo.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And now that's all I'm rooting for because of this draft. I like watch Cody Williams play. I'm like, that's all of him. Like, can we get this guy some food? Like, can he eat? He looks like, imagine having him out there defending as well. Like Grady Dick and him Kelly Olynyk. Can the Raptors just get one guy that I can believe in could not get posted up and scored on?
That's what I actually want. If the Raptors actually get the first overall pick, I actually like Sar. 7-footer who can actually really move.
Fine. Good.
But, like, what's our chance of the number one pick? Like, 14%, maybe even less? Like, come on, man.
It's not going to happen. Are you bringing back Gary Trent? Are you bringing back Bruce Brown?
I'm not bringing back Bruce Brown. And with Gary, I'd offer him the exact same contract he's on right now for 2 years. And that's it.
So, for me, the only way you're bringing back Brown is for an immediate flip in a trade. Like
optionality?
Yeah, optionality.
Oh, wow. Great.
I'm saying goodbye to Gary Trent.
Really?
I just have to. Yeah. Like, I know how great his dad has been to you. It's some of the most electric podcasting on planet Earth.
You know that Kawhi hostage photo? That's me with the Gary Trent family, man.
Yeah.
What am I going to say? I'm going to trade him? No, hell no.
No, correct. There's got to be a political answer. But for me, this is just a thing where you can... I really do think you can only have so many Gary Trent emotional types on your team.
Okay. All right.
And I think you already are at the saturation point of that. Like, I can't have another minus defender who jumps routes to try to get steals, and then you look at it, steals numbers are like, no, the rest of the defense is bad. Mm. Inconsistent, night in, night out.
So who's playing shooting guard then?
I think that you have to hope that this is going to be either one of your draft picks or this is going to be Grady Dick or, you're bringing in Bruce Brown back. I'd rather have Bruce Brown back than...
Really?
Yeah, Gary
Trent. Than Gary? Nah,
Because he's on the one-year deal and I'm like, okay, everybody just saw this guy on a championship team. Like, the things that apply at the deadline to getting Bruce Brown still apply to me moving forward. Like, he could at least be a trade piece for you. They've had Gary for 2 years going, he's available. And it was like... Yeah, you can get a second-round pick. Like, that's it.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think you can't come back with the same locker room, in my opinion. You have to have it.
Shake it up? All right.
You have to have some guys out. And it can't just be...
So who's going to emerge as the top dog in this locker room?
Dude, personality-wise.
It doesn't have to be the who's on the court, like, personality-wise.
I still think it has to be Barnes, that he has to evolve into that role. I still think that it's going to be RJ from, like, a professionalism standpoint. Like, he's going to be...
I got a lot of confidence in that.
Yes, that he's going to be the accountability guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that quickly has to be he and Scotty. The hope is, if you're a Raptors fan, like, the dream of all dreams is that those two guys actually have synergy, that those two guys actually get along, and that those two guys are actually holding each other accountable for some of the things you're talking about, like defensive slippages or, you know, culture stuff, that they actually look at it and go, you know what, this is our chance to do it.
We have
total run of the place. What are we going to do? What do we want to build?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just being out, like, and trying to collect a bunch of stats and going, oh, we made, like, all-star and fringe all-star and look at our statistics, but the record is kind of similar to what it was last year.
I agree.
But to me, it's like, I think you have to shake a little bit of this up. You have to remove some of the guys. You can't just refresh the page and go, oh, you're back. And when you say the thing about, like, well, who plays shooting guard, you know what that reminds me of? When they traded for Rudy Gay, and people were like, well, how are they going to use the money anyway? Because that's old Raptors mentality, where it's like, well, you might as well just get Rudy Gay because they're never going to be able to get a free agent here. And I'd be standing down there watching it going, I can't believe they traded for a guy that everyone in the NBA knows, like, this isn't it.
He's a fake good player.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, they did get that Clippers game.
They got that Clippers game. You know what? He was actually not bad for a game-winning shot.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. So I was going to ask you your Darko grade for year one, but I think we kind of got to that place.
It's kind of incomplete, but, like, look, man, he had good players at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. You can't give him that excuse at the start of the season.
Sure.
And they very much fumbled the start of the year.
So Masai re-signed in 2021, according to Grange. It's $15 million a year. Are we sure he's going to see this rebuild through? What's your over-under on years you're confident Masai Ujiri is still going to be here?
I think when you pay a man $50 million, you're going to keep him through his contract.
Okay.
You're not going to pay him $15 just to, like, sit at home. Right, so he's got 2 more years. Okay. And then, depending on how that turnaround goes, maybe you'll re-up. But we know Masai's not going to take less than 15.
Mm.
And if you're, you know, Keith Pelley coming in and you're like, all right, I'm the new MLS CEO, you got to answer to me now. Let's see what you've done here. It's like 15 is a high number, you know?
I still think back on this, by the way, with where they're at. Jerry's contract with the Raptors includes $15 million a year salary with the ability to earn more in incentive pay if the value of the franchise continues to increase. And if you read the Grange and Elliott piece, I thought about Masai because of the way that it could end up going for Tannenbaum and the way that the partial sale ended up happening and the franchise estimated value and what Masai has. He's going to be a very rich man.
Oh, I mean, yeah, of course. Like, and he deserves it. Here's the thing. He actually does deserve it, right? But I think it's just a matter of, like, you're not looking at it from the Raptor fan perspective. You're looking at it from, like, the MLSC president perspective or CEO perspective. Looking at it like, okay, if you're the board, are you going to pay him again for this? It's like they were, like, reluctant to, like, even give him this money even after he won the championship. He did the impossible. Yeah. Now it's like, well, he kind of got a rebuild and they're maybe in the play-in. It's like it's not the same sales pitch. It just isn't.
They got the Pacers draft pick next year, too. He's like,
oh, man.
Sell tickets. They got the Pacers pick. I actually think it's funny. Everyone's always talked about statues of guys that are going to get put in here and whether there should be a Kawhi statue and Kyle jersey retirement, all the stuff with Vince. And I actually think that, like, someday there's no question that there should be a Masai statue. Like, that he is going to be a statue-worthy executive for the city just in terms of changing the mindset.
Yeah.
The thing that breaks me in doing this segment is that it's like, I just can't believe how quickly it changed for me. Like, where it went from, I thought, this guy, when they were going, oh, he might go to a soccer team, I'm like, let him run whatever he wants. You know, like, let him run any business he wants. He is excellence embodied.
Crystal Palace would be so, like, lucky to have him.
Red Sox? Sure, go run a baseball team. He'll figure it out. He'll get, he'd be, believe in Boston.
Man. God.
It would happen. Okay, last question. Most interesting first round matchup for you?
Most interesting first round matchup. I'm going to be a sicko, man. I really want to see what Cavs Magic is about. I can't wait to tune into NBA TV, man.
I don't hate that. They don't hate that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see how far the Magic get with this, because I think offensively they're just, like, not that strong, but defensively, I don't know. So yesterday I was watching the Raptors game on the main screen because that's my job, and then I was watching Orlando versus Milwaukee, and it's shocking, another underwhelming performance by Milwaukee, who finally relinquished control of the two seed. But, like, I'm watching that game, and I was like, yo, Orlando is cutting off everything.
Yeah,
Boston, but, like, besides Boston, the best defensive team in the entire Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. And, like, nobody's really talking about them, so I can't wait to tune into NBA TV.
I want to see Suns-Wolves.
Suns-Wolves, that's pretty good,
Suns-Wolves, and it, close behind. We've seen it so many times, but this Clippers-Mavs one has different stakes, because I feel like whoever comes out as the only one that actually has a chance at beating the Thunder, or sorry, the Nuggets. Who, somehow did not end up with the one seed. Pretty incredible. Hey, man, we got to run. You got to run.
Yeah.
Future project TBD.
Yeah.
I loved seeing all the, you know, accolades and the praise that you end up getting, you know, making your announcement. Obviously, like, I'm a huge fan. Mm-hmm. I think that there are, like, when you do this stuff, you have to be authentic. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it doesn't resonate with people. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And, like, you having the mix of, like, passion for what you do, the authenticity that you bring to the microphone, the fact that, like, you know, you're an uncompromising guy. I think it's very admirable. I think a lot of people look at it, and it's impossible to replicate. And so, congrats on everything. And I really look forward to all the stuff. I'm going to miss you here. That's for sure.
I appreciate you. But no, you can still call me, man.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I'm happy to do this show.
I will. But yeah, man, good luck with everything moving forward.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Will Lou, Project TBD. Quick break, come back and hit some golf stuff.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's great having Will here. Again, I'm trying not to be, like, overly pessimistic about the Raptors' season or the Raptors' future, but it's just, man, to go from a championship and to feel like you have championship culture and to feel as though things have materially changed for an organization to this quickly is tough. Like, it's a really tough pill to swallow. And I know a lot of people have really complicated emotions with it because, man, they made you feel something that, frankly, no other organization in the city has for a very long time. And now it's like, boy, what the hell is the plan? What is the plan, and who is guiding it, and how are they guiding it? So just a lot of questions. Anyways, I was going to do my UFC 300 winners and losers here because it was an amazing card. But don't have enough time. I really want to blow that out. So I'll do that later in the show. I'm going to take a quick break and come back and talk about greatness, or no, stardom confirmed. That was the Nance call for Scottie Scheffler. Michael Collins, senior golf analyst and former PGA caddy. That's next on the two-time now Masters winner. So yeah, I was basically glued to the couch this entire weekend. I was barely outside, which is not great. Like, it was gorgeous.
Yeah, yesterday was really nice.
Yeah, I went out for brunch with a friend yesterday, and I went outside. I was like, ooh, this is what it's like. And guess what? The whole time I was there, I was like, I need to get back.
Just
to
house your brunch. Yeah. All right, thanks so much.
Hey,
see ya.
The Blue Jays are about to start, and the Masters is on, and I want to see the final pair. So let's hustle this up. But yeah, basically, I went to the Blue Jays game Friday night, so I did sports. I was doing sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday was just Masters,
mm-hmm.
Blue Jays, Maple Leafs, did the show. And then Sunday was just Masters, some NBA flipping to see what was going on around the association. And yeah, Blue Jays again.
Saturday was UFC as well, of course.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I just,
a little nightcap.
It wasn't even a little nightcap. We went late.
Yeah.
Thank God for Poetan just basically being like, hey, that's the end of tonight's events. Hey, everybody that's up late, don't worry. This is going to be five rounds. This guy is not up to par. There's a reason why you were all disappointed when this was named the main event. I'm going to explain why quickly.
Shortly, yeah.
Bang. Over. This is the guy you sent out here? And he's like, yeah, I obviously have to leave this weight class because this isn't it for me. But yeah, the highlight of the weekend was still the Masters. Like, I was explaining this to somebody how when you do this for a living and I cover every single sport, sometimes it can feel like a job, which isn't great, but you really get up still for like the big events, the high events.
The marquee ones.
The marquee events. And so something like this, it matters more. So Scottie Scheffler, stardom confirmed, as I said. Fastest of two Masters wins since 1934-36. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good stat to have. Three wins and no rounds over par in 2024. 80 weeks as the world's number one. And yeah, now the question is going to kind of become, how great can this guy be? How great is he now? Michael Collins, senior golf analyst and former PGA caddy. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Fantastic, man. What's going on?
Not too much, man. It's been a busy, busy, busy weekend. But yeah, this was the highlight of it, was watching Scheffler just, dominate. And you know, I was texting a buddy, basically, if we didn't get Bryson in the first round, like if we didn't have that moment, the entire story from beginning to end would have just purely been really about Scottie Scheffler. So I mentioned some of those statistics and sort of what he's doing right now. The betting odds are basically treating him like he's Tiger Woods. How great do you think this guy can be? He's only 27 years old, and yet the resume is starting to get really, really impressive.
Yeah, we haven't seen not only betting numbers like that, but also his ball striking numbers are better than what Tiger's were. And I, as a Tiger guy, it feels blasphemous to say. It feels like,
I was going
to
say, we can edit this out, don't worry. We'll edit that. That's going to get edited. Mark that time.
I mean, just like, yeah, it's wild. It's wild to see a guy who is this good at 27 years of age. We're just in a time right now where he's starting to be that guy when you see his name on the leaderboard, other golfers start going, oh, no, right? But he's also like, I haven't been at a tournament where when I was up on the platform doing my hits on SportsCenter and so on, people would be walking by, hey, man, who do you like? Who do you like? Who do you like? And I would say, listen, I don't know how someone's going to beat Scottie Scheffler, and he's got his B-minus game. He doesn't even have his A game this week. And what's weird was the response from people. And the response from people was, really? Come on. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Right? It's almost, what Scottie Scheffler is right now is Scottie Scheffler is what the San Antonio Spurs were when they dominated. He's not flashy. He's not. He's not someone who you think to yourself like, man, I really hate that guy, or man, nothing but Scotty Scheffler all the time, all day. That's all we want to see. He's just vanilla, but he's the best vanilla ever been put out there. is what it feels like, yeah. Right? Like, but no one wants to be like, yeah, you, hey, you want to go watch Scotty Scheffler play golf for like a bunch of holes? Nah. And so that's the thing. I think that we're in a weird place right now with golf, where we have a guy who is clearly above and beyond everyone else, but also fans are just like, yeah, that guy's really, really good. You want to go watch him? Nah. Let's go watch Bryson.
You know what's weird, though, is like that's the thing to me that I can't really put together when it comes to Scotty is like the A, is he interesting? Is he like what's the personality like? I'm like, you know, were we that invested in Rory because he had an accent? Like, I don't, there's not many golfers.
We were that invested in Rory because he said things that other golfers wouldn't say.
Like the one quote from Full Swing where he's like, yeah, don't like Phil. It was like, ooh, like that was it. Like that was like, we waited an entire season for him.
Say,
yeah, I mean, know what he said is this radio.
Phil, yeah. Which a lot of people did love.
Yeah, you know? Of course. But, and then right after, right. He was like, actually, it turns out that I really love Liv. It's great. I never said I didn't like it. It's like, okay, yeah.
No. See, now that, there you go. But here's the thing. And Rory never said that. And here's the thing. And I just, it's funny that you talk about Rory up because I literally was with his dad yesterday. Okay. Gary. And I was talking to him about it, and Rory and I had a great conversation at Arnold Palmer. And you know the thing I told, what I said about to Rory was, you're the only guy who is never married to his ideas. Like, most people come out and they go, I hate, and he did, I hate Liv. I wanted to die, I wanted to go away, I think it's terrible, I don't want to ever see those guys again. It's almost like, it was like breaking up with a relationship with a girl, and you're like, I hope I never see you again, and I hope you never fall in love, and I hope bad things happen to you, right?
Yeah.
But then after a while, you're like, yeah, you know what? It's kind of my fault. I did some things I probably shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
And Rory's that way about life, and especially about Liv, where he's like, hey, would golf be better without the guys from Liv if they literally just went away? Probably not.
No.
But the problem is, when people come out and scream stuff like that, now they feel like, well, if I change my attitude, if I change my mind, even if I get information that I didn't have before, then I'm going to look dumb. No, you're going to look more stupid by having information that should change your mind, and then you act like you can't change your mind. That makes you look more stupid, but no one wants to do that. And Rory's the guy who, when it comes to golf and stuff, he has grown more as a human being and been a better adult than most people because of that. Because most of the time, guys, people who are in the spotlight, either they're going to give you the PC boring answer that you're like, well, we're never going to use this in the media because it's just the company line. Here we go. But Rory just has never done that. So people have loved him and hated him.
I'm just saying, like, more so getting kind of the back to the Scottie Scheffler thing is golf, you know, unless it's like Tiger Woods or I think Koepka had this for a little while with the way that he would speak about the sport and, you know, just being very open with the media, being a very different guy. Like, this golf has had some compelling figures. I think Phil has been that for a lot of people. But, like, compared to a lot of his peers with Scottie Scheffler, like, recently, like, I don't view him all that different than Rom. And yet people are like, this guy's so boring, Scottie Scheffler. He's just so boring of a personality. I'm like, okay, but that's, like, that is a little conducive to the sport. Like, this is not a sport. It's not boxing. You know, they don't have to promote fights. So, like, I guess I am a little curious as to why with Scheffler he doesn't resonate with people when the dominance seems to be at a point that is different than anybody maybe since Brooks. Because Brooks had the major thing for a little while where we're like, okay, maybe this guy just dominates the biggest stages and this is all he can really get up for. But, like, yeah, even comparing him to Rom, who people went, oh, man, this guy's...
It's because Brooks was a bully.
Yeah.
He was the jock.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Would stuff
and he
you
was
in a
bullying Bryson, who's the biggest
like
guy.
Care.
Yeah, he's like,
right.
I'll pick the
and
biggest
Bryson,
guy and bully him.
Bryson got to be the bigger guy, like, we had the drama between Brooks and Bryson. Brooks kicked sand in Bryson's face, right? Like, I had them both on my radio show And Bryson, with that time when they had a little, let's say, come to Jesus meeting on the driving range at Liberty National, and I had him on the radio afterwards, and Bryson was like, I don't know why people thought we were going to fight. Brooks would kick my ass. And Brooks followed it up immediately with, you got that right. Yeah. And it was like, whoa, take it easy. Like, it's golf, right? So we have these personalities that are very they are easy for other people to get behind and love or hate, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing about Scottie Scheffler. What Scottie Scheffler, he is who he is. What you see is what you get. And, like, even his dad, Scott Scheffler, who people would rather put a microphone in front of Scott Scheffler instead of Scottie Scheffler, because Scott is, like, so he is very he's very outspoken. He's very outgoing. He's fantastic. But the one thing he said about his son, Scotty, was like, it was more important to him that Scotty be a good person than a great golfer. If he's a great and Scotty, he's a great person. Like, this is the dude who's like, would be a perfect elementary school teacher. And you're like, man, we got to dig up some kind of dirt on this dude. Like, come on, man. Don't tell me he just goes to church every Sunday and, like, he's just a great guy and just so plain. And the last time he won the Masters, we follow him with cameras and he went and got a cone of vanilla ice cream, one scoop. Like, what? You ain't even getting no sprinkles? Nothing? Like, give us something. And that's why it's hard for people to get behind him, because it's like, hey, man, isn't it awesome that dude who gets a scoop of vanilla ice cream on a plane? He don't even get a sugar cone? No, it's not. But he's just, when you have a person who's down to earth, good guy, has no controversy whatsoever, you're like, hey, man, isn't this dude compelling? No, not really. Just a regular guy who is great at golf and happens to just not really what we would be called is boring at home. You're like, yeah, we should do stuff on that. Why? Who wants to watch that?
You know what I think is most compelling about him, though, is something that you touched on a little bit earlier when we were talking about where you said, you know, the way that he impacts the rest of the field, where they feel like there's an inevitability to him. And that's how I felt like going in his tournament, or not going in, sorry. And going in, you're making narratives for everybody. But when it was, when he's heading into Sunday and he had a, you know, it was just a one stroke lead, but it's Augusta, right? And he was like, at one point, the books were flipping him from minus 125, and the best odds you could ever get on him heading into the final day was plus 105. And I'm looking at this, and I was talking to all my buddies going, we need to bet this. This is actually an incredible value for this guy, that we're getting him at a minus number with a one-stroke lead heading into the final day. And I'm going through the case. I'm like, these guys are going to wilt around this guy. And it does happen, right? He birdies on 9, and it just felt done. And the other guys all of a sudden start falling apart. You wonder if they're looking up at it. And that, to me, is what's so important for golf right now, is this guy raises the stakes for everybody else. Because now if you can beat this dude, if you can stare into his eyes and get this thing done, I am going to have a different level of respect for your game and your ability. And so having a true top dog, having it where it's, again, kind of like the Koepka thing at the majors for a little while, but the feeling of this guy being 27 years old and potentially getting, you know, a 5-6-7 year run of this, that to me is the most compelling part of it. So it really does sound like you believe that, you know, that birdie on 9 impacted guys, and just his ability started to actually maybe had an impact on what we saw from Morikawa and Homa specifically.
I said it before the week started when the number came out and he was plus 425.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, that number's horrible.
Horrible, yeah.
Well, the last time I checked, if I give you a dollar and you give me $4.25 back, I won.
Yeah.
Right? I think we're the greedy ones.
Yeah.
We're like, look, man, give me the guy who's plus 200. Give me the guy who's plus 20,000 or plus 2,000, like 20 to 1 to 30 to 1. 200, give me that guy. I'm like, why am I giving you someone who can't win? Mm-hmm. You're giving me $20. You want to give me 200 and I'm not giving you anything back? Cool. I'll take your money all day. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to tell you. Like, the last time I checked, if you get somebody at a plus number, you win. If I give you a dollar and you're getting more back, like, come on. What? I know it's not sexy. I know it's not pretty, but a win's a win. Like, remember it was Tiger in the field? We're at that place right now where it's Scheffler versus the field, and he didn't have his A game. He just didn't. It's hard. And that's the other thing I think more people have a problem. It's like, no, we need that dude to come out of nowhere who's like 400-1, 300-1. Because early in the year, remember, we got that. And then Scotty started playing events, remember? Mm. And what's he won? 5 out of the last 6. Sorry, not sorry. Like, I can't make this exciting, but what I can tell you is that's how good this dude is. Mm-hmm. Like, when his name is up near the leaderboard, other guys feel like they have to press, and other guys feel like I can't make mistakes, even if Scotty's making mistakes. Now, it's a little different than where it's different from Tiger. Like, when Tiger was up at the top of the leaderboard, guys couldn't break 70 if they were playing with him. And it's not necessarily that way with Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
Guys can still play good golf because he doesn't have that, like, crazy intimidation factor.
No.
Like, Tiger didn't really speak to money guys when they were out on the course together. You get to that first tee, and I remember caddying for Daniel Chopra, and it was like, this dude didn't even want to shake your hand when they made the announcement.
God, I love that.
He would do it. And that's the thing. And again, it was one of those things where, like, yo, here come Tiger, bro.
Don't look him in the eye.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Where Scotty's not like that, you know? And so people are having a hard time wrapping their head around, like, no, man, he can't be that guy. And, like, he is. He's that guy in a different way.
Okay, so then I guess this is sort of where we're getting to, because golf has always been searching for, like, the next Tiger. He's never going to be Tiger in terms of being compelling, and he's not going to be as great as Tiger. These things are obvious. But is he better than all the guys that we've basically tried to put into this role as the top dog? Like, is he better than Rory was at the peak of his power? Is he better than that moment when we had, you know, with Jordan Spieth, where we went, oh, my God, he might be the next guy? Brooks, you know, DJ, go on down the line. Rahm, all these guys that have been number ones, is he the best since Tiger?
No.
Ooh.
If you put man on man, everybody A-plus game, when it's all going, Rory's the best.
Okay.
The problem is it's been forever since we've seen Rory's A-game.
Mm-hmm.
But Rory's A-game beats everybody else's A-game in golf right now. We just ain't seen his A-game. That's the problem for Rory. We have not seen his A game. Now, Scotty is number two, and it's close between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's – if it's A game versus A game, then I'm going to take Rory, you know, since the Tiger era has passed.
Okay.
And most guys I talk to in golf agree.
They agree with you.
Okay. That's the thing. The problem is Rory just – we haven't seen Rory's – we haven't seen that Rory McIlroy in a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, and the other part of this, too, is, like, he didn't even end up doing his classic Rory backdoor into a top 10 finish at Augusta.
Well, Rory being Rory. A backdoor top 5.
Yeah. Like, that, we didn't even get that this year. And I am curious if you think that he's ever going to be able to put this behind him. Because now, you know, the thing about Augusta is I think now 7 of the last 10 winners have been in their 20s. And it felt like one of my biggest takeaways from this thing was, man, Åberg is, you know, being around, this guy looks nasty. He looks awesome. But also,
Ludvig is the next one.
That's what I'm saying.
Just a heads up.
He's the next one. But also, it doesn't feel like the impossibility of a debutant winning at Augusta is what it used to be, just because the sport is getting younger. And for someone like Rory, that's going to be, you know, 35 years old next year, or he's 35, he's somewhere in that age range. I like that window to, you know, close the Grand Slam. It feels like it's right there, you know, like he's only got a couple of years left, I think, to actually do this thing.
No, I don't think so. Cause Augusta is one of those places where, because we go back there every single year,
mm-hmm.
even a guy who's over 40 can have a magical week. Right? I mean, didn't Tiger do that in 2019?
Yeah, but that's the mentals of those two guys.
And by that time, what's that?
The mental difference between those two guys at that course, though. You know what I mean? Like, Tiger's like, I know this place. I've owned this place. Whereas Rory's like, I was broken in this place. Like, I cannot do it in this place.
This was the first year I thought Rory had finally let go of all that baggage.
Mm.
But, again, this was also the year that Scotty showed up and was like, yeah, my stuff is okay right now. Not exactly where I want it to be, but it's good enough. It'll be fine. There will be years where Scotty comes and doesn't have that. And when those years happen, which I think for the next 4 or 5 years are going to be maybe 2 times in the next 5 years, but Rory will be – I mean, it's funny to say this about Rory, but – how often do we come to the Masters and we go, hey, man, can you believe that old guy's making a run? Mm-hmm. Like, holy cow, Bernhard Langer, he's like 137 years old. How in the world is he inside the top 20?
Yeah.
Or like last year with Phil. Hey, Phil did finish second last year.
Yeah.
And again, that's 50, what?
Yeah.
53 years old?
Yeah.
52 and stuff? Like, so to say that Rory just will never be able to get it done at the Masters, I think would be irresponsible because everyone will have that magical run.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rory will have that, what Darren Clark did at the Open Championship, where it was like you get to a point where you're like, nah, I'm too old to care anymore. And for Rory, it might be at 37, where it's like, man, it's the Grand Slam. And you're like, yeah, nah, you know? And I think then the gravity of it will hit after the fact. But I think there's a point where you have put so much into thinking about that where you're like, I just don't have the energy to think about that anymore. Like what Rory did with all the policy boards he sat on this past year. He was like, you know what? I don't have that energy. I'm tired of not having fun playing golf. And he was like, I want to play a lot of golf and I want to have fun. Like, I'm done caring about all that other stuff. And Rory will find that at the Masters at some point, I believe.
So you said it's irresponsible. I'm going to say he's never going to win there. He's never going to win there. It's not happening. It is not. There is like,
you're the guy. Yes. You're like me with Tiger winning there.
Yeah.
I'm like, as I love Tiger to death. Is he ever going to win there? Okay. Is that where is he going to get to 18?
No.
And the people are like, really? Come on, man. Don't say that. I'm like, I'm sorry. I am sorry for being honest and real and stuff. And look, I'm sure Tiger was mad at me this week, too, when I was saying this stuff. But I'm being honest. Like, I love that guy, and I call him my friend, but I'm not going to blow sunshine and rainbows and be unrealistic. Like, Tiger could win the Masters this year. No, he can't. He told us straight up, like, he ain't got the stamina.
Yeah.
And if he's only playing, like, we see him one time in February in L.A., and the next real tournament he's playing at Augusta, well, guess what?
Yeah.
And we saw it happen on Saturday. After that adrenaline crash happens, whoops.
No shot. I'm with you on that. Okay, so if you don't think it's Rory, who do you think was the biggest loser of the week? Like, who do you think was the biggest loser at this entire event? So I got a few guys that I could make the case for.
Is anyone a loser that when Scottie Scheffler was going to win going in?
Yes, because, okay, can I make, here's my cases. One was Rory because it's like he couldn't even do the backdoor finish where I was like, man, I just don't know. Like, he just felt so far from the field. But to me, it was the guy that handed him the jacket where it was like, Rom never even had a moment. He went to live. And the big question is like, oh, man, he's all upset over there. And I went, oh, Rom. And you looked at, again, going back to the betting odds, it was plus 900 for Rom, plus 450 for Scheffler. And I went, man, that's a pretty big discrepancy between these two guys. Like, aren't they kind of supposed to be? And Rom, at least up until I think this moment, there was a feeling like these two guys are closer than maybe they are. And so to me, it was like when he was in there, but he gives him the jacket. I was like, you guys don't feel like you're neck and neck anymore. It feels like there's a huge gap between the two of you. And that makes you, to me, a pretty sizable loser. And I think the other one slightly is Bryson because he had this incredible start. And we went, oh, maybe. And then he just did exactly what everyone expected. And I went, yeah, now nothing has changed in terms of my perception of Bryson. So I think it's one of those two guys.
I completely disagree with the Rom thing.
Okay.
And here's why. We know how good Scottie Scheffler is, right?
Yep.
How come he didn't win last year?
Totally. That's last year. That's what
you know
I'm saying.
What I'm saying is, do you know why he didn't win last year? Because repeating at the Masters is almost impossible. Mm. There's a reason that the guys who have done it, you can count on one hand. You know why? Because you have responsibilities that week that you don't have when you're not champion.
Okay.
Like, you know how much practice you get to do that week comparatively to the week you're not defending champion? Your schedule is completely different, and golf is all about routine. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, hey, my normal routine is to go here and do this now, and I do my chipping, and then I'm going to do my putting, and I take go have some lunch and stuff, and then I go back and do this. Blah. And now you're like, hey, at 9 a.m., you're going over here to do this with these members. Then at 10 a.m., you're going over here to do this with our radio and digital stuff. And then you're going over here at 11:30. You're like, hey, when do I get to get into my routine?
Mm-hmm.
Right? There you go. So don't be surprised if Scotty's putting the jacket on somebody else next year.
Yeah.
Because repeating the Masters is almost it's gargantuan to try and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to say all of these things about, you know, hey, this person, Rahm especially, you have to say that with a little grain of salt. Don't think for one second that dude is not going to be back up near the top of the leaderboard next year, because you know what he doesn't have?
Mm-hmm.
The same responsibilities.
I love
that. So he's going to be able to get in his routine. Now, I will say this, and my initial, like the first thing that popped in my head, you said like who was the disappointing or who lost the most?
Yeah. You're more diplomatic about it, but yeah, okay, yeah. Who lost the most?
Who lost the most coming into after this Masters?
Yeah.
I would say it was the LIV players.
Oh,
last year we had 7 guys inside the top 10,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And no one could come with the narrative last year that it was like, you see, guys who only played 3 rounds wear shorts. They ain't gonna be able to make it in a big tournament. Yeah. And then 7 guys finish in the top 10 and was like, hey, we would like to give you the opportunity to exercise your right to shut the front door.
Yeah.
Right? Like, whoops. And everybody was like, we'll be over here shutting up real quick. Sorry about that. We can't use that no more. Damn it. Right? Like, so now, this year, that no one finished inside in the top, you're like, oh, you know, that. Mm-hmm. In where both sides, this right now, both sides understand, listen, we got to find a way where we can play against each other more often.
Mm-hmm.
After this year at the Masters, everyone was like, huh, well, maybe we don't need to scream that quite as hard. And so that, I think, in that sense, no one from LIV showed up and showed out to a point where you were like, yo, we got to – let's make sure we get these dudes – like the scream for that is less now than what it would have been if those guys would have been up there and stuff, you know. And a guy like – I know people would, like, dislike this guy with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Patrick Reed finishing tied for 12,
mm-hmm,
only now he's not qualified for any more majors this year. And when you think about a bunch of LIV guys, mm-hmm, like, one of the things we love about sports is rooting for against guys, right?
Totally.
Guys you love to hate. You want to watch and be like, I just want to watch that because I want him to melt down and I want to see it on TV. Where if you don't have guys like that, think that's where golf is in such a bad position. Because all the guys with all those personalities that you were like, man, that dude just rubs me the right way. I can't wait to see him get his behind beat. Mm-hmm. They're all gone.
Yep.
So now it's like, hey, man, let's turn on TV and watch some more vanilla. You'd be like, let's get some vanilla. What do you want on top? More vanilla? You'd be like, oh, my
more.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Can we get just some strawberries?
No, that's the most interesting thing. They're like, how many scoops of vanilla can we put on top? That's it. It's like, how many can we do?
Won't that be awesome us?
Yeah.
No, it won't
be. Look how high it is. It's such a high tower of vanilla.
It's a giant, who wants to watch a giant tower of vanilla? He's like, not me.
Yeah.
Hell, even Jason Day, they were like, yo, take off that vest. You're lucky we don't bring you some yoga pants and force you to wear those instead of your baggy pants from the 80s. Like, oh, dog, man, geez, a whiz. That's another one. How are you going to make fun of Jason Day's pants? He'd be like, all these people that are screaming about his pants, do you not think in 20 years people are going to be looking at the outfits we wore today, 20 years from now, and be like, look at those idiots.
Mm-hmm. It's already happened in my life where I remember being in university going, I'll never be like my parents. I'll never look back on these and cringe. And now already I'm like, please don't ever show anybody any of these photos of me.
Why'd you let me get my hair cut like that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll pay any amount to not have these leaked. Do anything. I'll make sure that they're there. Hey, Michael, it's always a great pleasure getting to chat with you. Thanks so much for making time for us today, pal.
Man, always. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me be a part of it. You know, I'm not going to lie. When I was doing stand-up comedy, Toronto, that was my spot right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
back in the day, Comedy Wood on Avenue on Bloor and another one on Bathurst and Steel. And I would come up there for like 2 weeks to a month. And it's my favorite city in the world. Y'all a bunch of hockey freaks. But as a Philadelphia Flyers fan, I had to stay away from y'all for a while.
Correct.
You know, because of that. So,
correct.
You know,
you know what? So you still like the Flyers?
Come on, I'm born and raised.
Good, then stay away. Then stay out. You're not welcome. You're not welcome back. Yeah. This is what I was trying to
have. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. Hey, Michael, thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you.
Talk to you soon, man.
See you,
thanks.
Dude. Michael Collins, senior golf analyst and former PGA caddy. Yeah. I still think the biggest loser was Bryson just for that. It's like he's incredible day one. And all I could come away with was, I do not care. There was never a moment where I went, you know, maybe I should put a little sprinkle on Bryson. It was always the exact same thing. Yeah. He's not in this. He's not a serious person. He's not in this. And guess what? He was not a serious person. And he was never actually in it.
It was kind of fun after the first round to be like, ooh, I can't wait to watch him fall apart.
Yeah, that's
like everybody
it.
Just hates
that's
him. So
it.
I was like,
that's
ooh,
the only thing.
We're going to watch him hit some bogeys over the next couple days.
That was the only thing. Anyways, I got to talk about UFC 300 because, yes, my boy Max was the story. That's next.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So yeah, like I said, I spent the entire weekend inside, rotting, essentially. Other than quick trip down to the ballpark, which Friday night was bleak, I gotta tell you. It was not a...
Yeah, that was the 20 hits for the Rockies
yeah.
one?
Yeah. It's like... Let's go see Kevin Gausman. Oh, well, he's looking horrible again. It's fine because the Jays responded by not giving him the run support that he needed. And then anytime you bring in, I don't even know that guy's name yet, but the new mop-up guy that the Jays have, the no longer Wes Parsons guy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say Pinto, but it's not Pinto. But anyway, yeah, it was, oof. I never leave games early. I left that game early.
Really?
Granted, it was in the eighth, but I still left early. I was like, yeah, that's enough. That's enough of this. Saturday night after Leafs talk, and actually, can I be honest?
Yeah.
During the Leafs game, mm-hmm. I had UFC 300 on. It was such a stacked card from a depth standpoint. Like, the top was uber disappointing in terms of having that be the main event, especially since we were, like, waiting and waiting and waiting, and there was rumors about Conor McGregor and... You know, we're all trying to come up with our own theories. Potentially, it's going to be Izzy and Duplessis. Like, it's going to, there's all these different, and it ends up being Jamahal Hill, who, yeah, we saw what he was, and not that great. And it was Poatan. Like, people like Bejeda. He's an interesting fighter. He's got a crazy, cool story. But I still don't know how much he moves the... They always do this thing in the UFC where they're like, you should see how crazy of a star he is where he goes anywhere. I'm like, okay. But I've never been nuts about him, and I always feel like we keep doubting him, and then he keeps coming through, which is the cool thing about his story, right? Like, I had a phone call with my brother before watching all the fights, and we were, like, trying to pick out our best bets and the things that we were going to do. By the way, follow on Twitter and Instagram, at JD Bunkus, put out some bets. I was one choke fight away from 6 of 8. And then there was, yeah, I took the 2.5 over rounds on the main event. That one looked stupid. I was like, whoopsie. Yeah, that was dumb. I thought they were going to feel each other out. It's like, no. It was just, it's pretty good value for a 5-round fight. No. Horrible bet. But the other one's pretty good. Well, I'm doing the call with him, and we're shot. And it's just, you always think that Pereira is going to not be good on the ground and that someone's going to be able to take him down and grapple with him and control him. And that just, like Ngannou, when he had his fight, his first fight with Miocic, when he has his first Stipe fight and Stipe is just taking him down and dominating him that way. He can't defend the takedown. You're like, yeah, dude, that's what happens. You're a new fighter. You haven't had a lengthy resume. You didn't come from collegiate wrestling. Clearly, this is going to take you some time. And man, with Pereira, it's incredible just the fact that he keeps doing this. Like, no one seems to have that answer for him. Now he wants to go up and fight at heavyweight. He wants to go fight Aspinall, and I'm really excited for it. That is going to be an incredible fight, because if this guy goes across 3 weight classes and does this, he beats Adesanya, goes up to light heavy, and he just starches everybody, and then he goes up to heavyweight, and he actually ends up securing a knockout. This is just like all-time stuff. This is Ngannou across multiple weight classes. Even when, like, remember when we first got ready for him, and we were thinking, oh, he's probably not going to beat Izzy in MMA. Like, that's cool that he beat him in kickboxing, but this is a whole different animal. It's like, nope, did the same thing. Did the same thing to Izzy. And Izzy knows when he got his win, like, oh, that's done. That chapter's done. Never doing this again. Because I think he knows deep down that he wouldn't beat him again. Like that he did get lucky to beat him. Anyways, the biggest winner obviously is Max Holloway. It's a legacy fight. That's as good as he's ever looked. I obviously have Max is my favorite fighter since GSP. And I think that he should be everybody's favorite fighter because I tweeted something to this effect. No one has had a better mix, maybe in UFC history, of style, grace, coolness, ability, likability, you know, sportsmanship. He is just the consummate everything to the UFC. Like, he is every single thing you could possibly want a fighter to be. Like, with George St. Pierre, when he was doing it, the thing I really loved about George was not only is he dominant, right? Not only does he have class, but he embodied what I thought mixed martial arts was supposed to stand for. Like, he was a martial artist. He seemed to really understand the craft. And Max taps into something different where, like, when he pointed to the middle of the octagon to stand and bang with Justin Gaethje, one of the most dangerous punchers in UFC history, when he has nothing to gain from it, nothing, because the fight is over. He has won every single one of these rounds. He's dominated. This is against a guy that most people thought it was going to be a bloodbath. Most people thought this could end Max's career. I was terrified going into this fight. I was like, please don't let this be like the Tony Ferguson fight where Max comes out of this and he's not the same guy. To do that and then finish it that way is the coolest thing that I've ever seen in an octagon. I was so pumped up. I genuinely didn't go to sleep for hours after. My brother called me. He's like, he was at a sports bar and he got so amped up by it that he ran up to the screen and flexed like an idiot. Like, ran up to the screen and did the flex. Like, oh my God. Because you lose your mind in a moment like that. That was a one-of-one cool sports moment. I got to say, it was great having Joe Rogan be a part of that broadcast and, like, that broadcast team in general, where it's Anik, Joe, and Cormier, because they all really deeply care about the sport. Like, they're all real fans of it, and they had the sense of that moment, and they were losing their minds, and none of them had a voice at the end because they were all freaking out about how cool of a moment that was. And man, I feel bad for people that weren't watching that live, like straight up, because you're never going to see something that cool again. Like, you can watch the highlights, you can see it in the past and go, oh, cool knockout. You will never understand what it was like to see that in that moment. That was a singular sports moment that is going to go down as one of the greatest in the sports history. Period. 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 Unbelievable. That's why the fight game is just so awesome. And that's why sports are just completely undefeated, is because you can have those moments and you can be a part of that as it's happening. But yeah, Max Holloway, after he sucks that Volkanovski exists if you're a Max Holloway guy, because yeah, just the perfect killing machine showed up at just the right time in Max's peak, and he beat Max, even though I do think Max actually took one from him and was robbed. But all of a sudden now everything has changed. All of a sudden Max Holloway looks like that, has a win like that, where he really didn't get touched up too. That's the thing. He didn't take a lot of damage from Justin Gaethje. Like, the leg kicks thing remain a problem with Max. He just guys will chew up that leg. Volk chewed up that leg. Gaethje started chewing up that leg. And I went, oh, how does that not have a residual effect? Or is it just going to get stronger? I don't know. But either way, he's back to being a title contender. He does want to go back down, which is crazy because he actually looked awesome at that weight. He didn't look small at all. He looked powerful. That was as much as I've enjoyed a fight in a really, really long time. The class of Max Hall, it's like right as soon as the fight ends, it's the first thing he says. Hey, guys, respect to Justin Gaethje, because this guy didn't have to give me this fight, and he did. He could have done a million different things, and instead he ends up fighting me for BMF. And yeah, I said, I think they should retire that belt. I don't think that there's anyone that's going to be badder as an M and F-er than Max Holloway, because he did the damn thing, man. That was an incredible, incredible legacy fight. And I'm so glad that he got it because, and you know what? It's funny because, like, when that belt first came out, I was like, cringe. And now I love it. Now I'm just all in on it. I can't believe that this thing worked. It's like the World Juniors. It's a fake tournament. And then somehow we all really cared about it. And we're like, okay, I guess World Juniors.
Got the claws in you.
And now it's there. Now it's got me forever. Anyways, I thought it was incredible. I hate to break this to you, Armin, my Armenian guy, who he's a different Armin. I still can't say his last name.
Sarukian.
There you go. That was your moment. I was so glad you jumped in with that. I was like, bro, if you don't, of all the times you flip the mic on, I was like, this has got to be it. Sarukian. I actually think he lost the fight because there were two deep submissions. Like, if you end the fight and the guy's got you in a clinch like that, like in a hold like that, I'm like, okay, just like, I don't think he was ever getting out of it. He was basically completely submitted for over a minute. But I thought it was close. It wasn't, I thought it was going to be a split decision that was going to end up going like Charles's way. But I wasn't like really strong about it. Clearly, Armin had the best round. Second round was awesome. Like, splits him open, beats him up. Just, you know, awesome ground and pound stuff. My only real thought about it, though, is he looks like a lesser version of the guy he's going to fight for the belt, Islam. Like, I don't think that he is any threat to actually be champion. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this ends up being old takes exposed. But I think that he's going to get in for his championship fight and... yeah, Islam Makhachev is going to wipe the floor with him. I thought the funniest thing ever was that tweet, though. Islam had a tweet. He's like, get ready, little boy, or something. Pull the tweet up that he had. I said, that's amazing. Iconic chirp right away. Be ready, little boy, or something to that effect.
Be ready, see you soon, boy.
Yeah, be ready, see you soon, boy. I was like, oof, yeah. Like, that's your reward. The UFC is ruthless. Like, the fight game is ruthless. It's like, you win. And the first thing is, who are you going to fight next? A tougher guy. Oh, wow. You won. Here's your sweet reward. Fighting someone who can beat your ass. Like, sweet, sweet, sweet reward. Anyways, I loved it. Incredible card. The main event sucked, but yeah, it was to be expected. Everything else kind of lived up to the hype. And yeah, everything, like, again, you go on down that card and it was loaded. Every single fight was captivating. It was just like start to finish. Really, really good. It was almost even fitting that Pereira just ended it the way that he did because, yeah, nobody wanted to stay up. It was already, like, running late. I was like, come on, guys. Like, let's wrap this up. And boom, it was over. Okay. Anyways, what else did we miss?
Austin Matthews, chase of 70, continues. Got 69th goal on Saturday.
Yeah, very nice.
We're interested in what the coach had to say.
Yeah. So we got that audio. All right, let's play it. Let's just keep.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a major distraction. It doesn't help us, you know, what we're trying to accomplish on the ice. But it's exciting. I get it, you know, and it's especially when he gets to 69, you can see it. It's growing, anticipating, and now you're feeding it. You know, I'm feeding it. You know, I want it to happen. But wanted it for the fans. You know.
Oh.
I'm glad the game's over. Let's move on.
Dude, okay, so this is so funny. I didn't listen to it up until now because I just read it and I went, okay, I want to have a live reaction on the show. What was the actual question? Do we have the question?
Yeah, the question was kind of paraphrasing here, but it was, what's your reaction to hearing all the fans buzzing when Matthews touches the puck?
Okay, so this is the part that I'm confused about. That's why I wanted the question, because when he says it's a distraction, like, was he talking about the fans?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Like, but when I went, there's no way that that's what he's doing, right? He's talking about his team, the way that they're reacting. But
yeah.
I was like, that's the craziest response. And I think he realized it in the middle of talking about it. And that's why you see the answer start to trail off that way. He's like, yeah, but I supported too. And
yeah, it's a real
the fans,
conflicted answer, right?
The fans, I wanted it for them because I want it too, and I'm a part of it too. And then he's like, oh, let's just move on because, you know, he put his foot in his mouth. It's kind of funny. I get it, okay? I'm not even going to stomp on Keith because, dude, obviously you can never go at the fans. I'm sorry. You're the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I know, whatever, but you can't be mad at the fans or frustrated with the fans because they're excited that someone's about to score seven
scoring
goals.
A bunch of goals.
And you like you gotta be able to separate yourself from coach and angry coach for just a second there. Like, yeah. You get it. You lost a game and you wish you won.
I think he wanted it for himself more than the fans. Let's be honest.
No, but that's
just the weight off his shoulders.
No, that's great. That's no, but I'm saying that when he says, obviously that's a distraction or that doesn't help us. Like, normally the only time you do that, it doesn't help us to the crowd is if they boo.
Yes.
That's the only time.
Yeah.
You say
they were, here's the thing, JD, they were cheering a little too loud and
that's it. That's crazy stuff. That's crazy stuff from Sheldon Keefe. But again, I kind of get it because here's this coach, and man, you think like Justin Bourne and Sam McKee, like these two guys are hammering. I think Kipper's going to do it later. These guys are nervous about Austin Matthews. Like they're like, oh no, don't get hurt. Don't play hockey. Put him in bubble wrap. Don't let him play for a week. Oh my God. And there's a lot of fans like that. Sheldon Keefe more so than anyone is like that. He knows they lose in the first round. He is gone. Hey, what assistant coach job would you like to have next year, sir? Because that is what you're looking at. He needs Austin Matthews healthy, and he probably wants his team still playing the right way and doing these things, and he's getting nervous about it too, probably. And he doesn't want them focusing on the wrong thing or peaking, trying to follow his thing. Whatever crazy theories he has developed in his mind are totally justifiable because his livelihood is on the line, and he wants this team to have success. He's put a ton into it, and so he doesn't want to see it evaporate because the guy was chasing a milestone that is amazing, but ultimately, at the end of the day, is not going to have any impact on his job security or the way that we perceive this year's successes and failures. No one's going to see the Leafs get bounced in the first round and go, yeah, but Matthews had 70. Like, it's a very fun thing, and it's an awesome thing, and I want to see it, and I'm fully embracing it. But yeah, if it does go sour, that's not, you know, that's the secondary note. That's the second paragraph. First sentence, Leafs lost first round again. Second sentence, Austin Matthews had 70 goals in the regular season. That doesn't lead.
Let's doomsday this, though. Let's say he doesn't get the 70.
No, why?
Is it a legit negative or a legit, like, dejection to the team heading into the playoffs?
No, I don't think so. I think they would check that immediately. I think it would be dejecting. Is that word? No?
Dejecting?
No. I don't think so.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right. I think that the team would be dejected if they decided to sit him for the final two games of the year and they really put the squeeze on him to say none of this matters and nobody cares. And I just think that you don't screw with momentum like that. People always say, like, momentum doesn't exist game to game. And I'm like, yeah, kind of, except for vibes do. Like, the way that you feel going into work does. And I think that having a reason to be excited to go to the rink and play hockey for these guys. And people go, like, oh, what about the millions of dollars? It's like, yeah, man, just, like, you're paid to do your job, and you're worth what you're worth, and you don't show up to work every single day with, exuberance. It's just natural that that's going to be the same way for these guys. And so the fact that they have a goal that they're all kind of pulling for in the same direction, I think, is a good one. Anyways, I think it's fascinating that it's ended up here. It's literally the perfect spot for narratives and discussions where he is going to go into the final two games, potentially searching for it. I want him to get it against Florida, and I genuinely just do hope he sits against Tampa because it's back-to-back, and who cares, and it's the final game of the season. And I do think that there would be kind of a... like, that would just be a little bit of a weirdness to me, him playing in that final game, knowing that he's chasing 70. Like, that's where it feels a little, like, stat-chasey, which is what you don't want, and which is why this has felt so good. Is that none of this has felt like forced. It hasn't felt like Ovechkin, where it's just, you know, every puck on his stick, he's like, fire it out tonight, get it on there. It's all power play. It's like he doesn't even get most of his goals on the power play. He's an even strength guy, and he's got two empty netters in the entire season. But yeah, you play him in that final game, and you're kind of like, this doesn't seem like all that worth it. Like, you're starting to get the balance out of order. So yeah, I hope he gets it against Florida, but yeah. That's a hilarious quote from Keith. I'm going to start ending all my shows like that. How does the clip end? Play the end of the clip, and then that's the way we're going to end the shows. Him being like, anyways, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
wanted it for the fans.
No. The end. The very end.
I'm glad the game's over.
Yeah, let's see.
I'm glad the show's over.
Subscribe and review. We'll see you tomorrow.